Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true, people. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life. That's right, craft of writing, business of writing, but also just how to be a person who writes and all the things you go through. I write about it. Jennifer Paris writes about it. Anyway, so we address the whole writing soul of the writer. It's all of course, we feature video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Yes, we do. Right now, I've got one with Susie Moore, wonderful Susie Moore, life coach. But next week, I'll have suspense author Michael Elias. But, fascinating guy. Worked in television, worked on all kinds of wonderful shows, classic shows, worked with Steve Martin a lot. We talked about that. We talked about novel writing. And interesting guy. So you see, we deal with all kinds of writers, interview all kinds of writers. That's all there. Authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, PNWA, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. And we're still doing it. And we're going to keep doing it. Pandemic or no, doesn't matter. Yeah, if you want to take a class with us, a virtual class, if you want to go to a virtual conference, stop on over to pnwa.org where you can sign up for all that. It's well worth your time. Yes, it is. Okay, so today's guest was introduced to me by one of the authors I interviewed recently, the lovely Laura Munson. Yeah, she said, you need to meet this guy. And she was right. So we talked and we had a wonderful conversation. And I said, got to have you on my show, Albert. And he said, okay. So Albert Flynn De Silva is with us today. He's a poet, memoirist, novelist, speaker, and workshop leader. Now his work has appeared in more than 100 literary journals worldwide, including what I think is pronounced Ziziva. I've seen that name for all these years. I've never tried to pronounce it. Ziziva, yes. And New American Writing, Hanging Loose, Jubilat, Exquisite Corpse, Jacket, Poetry Canto, Van Gogh's Ears, and many others. He's the author of several books of poems and the memoir Beamish Boy. He's also served as Marin County, California's very first poet laureate. And he has shared the stage with U.S. poet laureate Kay Ryan and bestselling authors Maxine Hong Kingston, Cheryl Strayed, Elizabeth Gilbert, and legendary beat poet Michael McClure. He's also the founder of Writing as a Path to Awakening, which is a fabulous book, I should point out. But Writing as a Path to Awakening, he founded that. And it's all about an embodied, interconnected approach to creativity and writing, just like I like. And so he's with us today. Albert, how you doing?
I am doing fabulous. Thanks, Bill. Really delighted to be here.
So, Albert, a lot of stuff, poetry, novels, workshops. Was it always writing for you? Was that really the path, or how did you come to that?
No, I was just writing about this morning, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I came to writing via photography, and I studied photography as an undergrad at the University of Colorado.
Uh-huh.
And then painted houses for a while and realized I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So then I went back to, what do? I go back to art school, and which took me to San Francisco, and where I wound up at the San Francisco Art Institute, and studying photography again. But then I was in San Francisco at the Art Institute, and there were all these incredible people who were painting and sculpting and doing performance art and installation art and so forth and so on. And so I kind of fell in with this crew sort of hovering around Paul Koss, who's an installation artist and video artist and just an amazing guy. And I just started just doing all kinds of stuff. And language just began to enter into the field.
Oh.
I found myself not making any photographs without titles that were very heavily thought about, to the extent that they were sort of poems and they had to be a part of the artwork. And then Bill Berkson, who is teaching art history there at the Art Institute, he's the legendary Bay Area poet. He died a few years ago. But he he was teaching art history. We all had to go through Bill's class. One night he sends me to a poetry reading. It, like, he didn't literally like pack me up in a box and ship me there, but he pretty much inspired me. I wasn't doing anything. I was bumbling around the studios, and he's like, "Hey, there's this reading at the Cal Theater. You should go check it out." I'm like, "Reading? I don't like poetry. I don't, you know, this isn't on my right." He's like, "I'm going to be reading. You should check it out." So I go down there, and the Cal Theater is a gorgeous theater out in Fort Mason, and it's an all-star cast. It's you know, the release party for the Norton Anthology of Postmodern American Poetry.
Wow.
And so all the – Diane DePrimo was there, and Lynn Higinian, and Alice Notley flew in from Paris, and Ron Padgett from New York, and it was just an incredible evening, and I was just – you know, I literally got hit over the head. Well, didn't get literally hit over the head. But I got wrapped to be a lightning bolt by something that Paul Hoover, the editor, said at the very beginning of his introductions. He was introducing the anthology, and he read this piece from Jack Spicer called Imaginary Elegies. I don't know if you know this poem, but
I don't.
It's a fantastic poem. And it has all these images of photography and references to photography. So I was rapt. And there's this one line where he goes, "Unbind the dreamers, poet, be like God." And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I want to be like that. No photographer ever said that.
Right.
So that was sort of the night I identify as my conversion to writing.
That's
poetry.
Right. You had like a born again kind of experience as a poet. Wow.
Totally. Well, and if you know Spicer, God is like, it's a mystical thing. He thought of poetry as this like form of magic and mysticism. It wasn't like, God, quick, go to church and study the Bible.
Right.
Not that kind of God.
No.
So.
No, yes. And so I agree. I think poetry was one of my first ways into really understanding writing. And I was a person who was spiritual in nature, but didn't know what to do with it. But art was one of the places that allowed me to be that way and connected me to that, and poetry for sure. You know, because the thing about poetry is of all the art forms, all the written art forms, I think poetry leaves the most room for the reader. You know, they kind of require the reader to finish the circle, you know, even more than fiction.
That's right.
And so when it works, boy, you feel like you've transported, because you've done so much. I think you did maybe more than the reader of, you know, a novel, for instance. You know,
well, it's demanding. That's the thing of it. You know, that's why I think most Americans have a hard time with poetry, because you got to do a little work. You know,
yeah, and they're like, you know what? I did enough work today. I've done enough work. I get it. But man, when it works for you, it's something. So that is interesting. So you came to it, and you know, you came to art through the avant-garde. You know, if you're talking about installation art and the art world, was this in the 80s, early 90s? When was this?
This was the early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, so you're talking about the avant-garde poetry and installation art. You're talking about things out of the mainstream. And so you came at art and when we talk about the avant-garde, we're talking about non-monetary, usually. Like, that's not the driver, you know?
That's an understatement.
Yeah, well, I know. But it's true. But that does root you in a particular relationship to the arts, which I will tell you, because I know you teach writing too. I teach it. And there are certainly people who have, you know, dollar signs in their eyes, poor pups, right when they start their writing career. And that I think that can get in the way.
It can indeed. No illusions from the get-go, because I was engaged in a fringe art form.
Yeah.
And within that art form, I was on the experimental fringe. So I wasn't in the, like, you know, the popular, like, Mary Oliver school. Where,
right.
You know, people,
right.
Or Billy Collins school, where they actually sell books and
right.
people show up to their readings. You know, I was hovering around with these folks in New York City and in San Francisco, and we had our little coterie, you know, and we published our little magazines. But, you know, there was sort of 10 or 20 of us.
Right. Right. Yeah, the poetry reading, when everyone there is are the people who are reading and their boyfriend or girlfriend, and
exactly.
I've been to those. You know,
yeah,
all right.
It was both inspiring and at times depressing.
Sure. Well,
depending on how you looked at it.
Well, at some point you have to say, you have to kind of make peace with reaching people doesn't mean selling out. In other words, finding a way to write in a way that you can connect with many people does not mean abandoning your artistic vision selling out. That is, the two are not necessarily synonymous. And obviously you began to move in that. So you wrote, initially it was poetry, I guess. Yeah. That was the first.
Yeah.
Where
for
you,
almost like 12, 15 years exclusively.
Don't you think, so you wrote Beamish Boy. And when I started writing memoir, writing about my own life, I realized that I thought poetry was my first crack at memoir, that there's something about, obviously it's not memoir, but sometimes you write Proof Rock, that's a character that he was writing. I mean, sometimes you have characters, but a lot of times it's your take on life. Yeah. I mean, it's your experience. And it struck me as that what I was doing in poetry, and see if this resonates with you, was similar to what I was doing with memoir, which is you take something that happened and you've got to look at it from the perspective that will make it interesting or profound or inspiring or whatever. And that poetry was my first time doing that. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, looking at something profound as opposed to more like narrative or more
right.
memory related.
Yeah.
Just looking at your own life
for source of material, really.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't really doing that consciously with the poetry. You know, I was
right.
more obsessed with music and with language.
Right.
And
right.
like, how could I convey a sensibility?
Yeah.
You know, a sensibility
yeah.
or an insight. But then the whole memoir thing was just like a complete transformation in it. And that was sort of born out of the practice of meditation, someone
really
sent me to a.
All
yeah,
right, so
someone sent
make
me
that
to
connection
a,
for me. How did meditation
yeah, so,
lead to Beamish Boy?
Well, so I started going to. I used to drive out from San Francisco and from East Marin. I would drive out to Point Reyes and these places in West County to go hike and bike and get inspiration.
Yeah.
And I used to pass by this. Place on the side of the road. I really didn't understand what it said. There was a sign there and it said Spirit Rock Mediation Center, or at least that's what I thought it said.
Mediation. See, that's a mistake I would have made. I totally would have done that.
It turned out it was a meditation center. My
right.
friend like, had to correct me by smacking me in the head. And then, of course, the following week was like, you should come here and we'll just sit in silence and breathe. And I was like, it sounded
yeah.
terrifying. But
right.
I went and I sat, and there was Jack Kornfield, and he spent most of the time.
Oh, it was Jack Kornfield?
Reading poems. Yeah. Yeah, and he was reading poems. And within like the first few months I was going there, he devoted an entire night to poetry. And I was
wow.
like, well, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Poetry and divinity, poetry and wisdom, poetry and waking up from these narrow perceptions you have of your own
right.
trauma, your own experience.
Right.
And then I things just started to become more narrative as my, when you sit down to get quiet, at least for me, my whole interior repressed life began to unravel
right.
and
right.
show up. The
yeah.
grief showed up and the terror
yeah.
showed up and the fear. And I was like, where is it all coming from? What is it?
Yeah.
And then of course I finally got into therapy and then started teasing out all these aspects of my life. And, why did I drink so much for so long? And,
right.
why did I almost
right.
kill myself? And,
right.
And then,
yep.
you know, and then I started reading memoirs, and especially the drinking memoirs, you know, like my favorites being Augustine Burroughs' Dry. I don't know if you ever read Dry.
I have not. But, you know what? I was going to interview Augustine Burroughs and it fell through. I really enjoyed he wrote about how he was
running with scissors.
No, it was one of his one of his later ones, but he talked about just being this raging alcoholic, but then watching a shopping channel, and somehow that writing sort of cured him of the memoir I read, his writing kind of cured him of the alcoholism. I don't know if that was true of the one you read.
Yeah. So he, you know, I read those books, and I was like, wow.
Yeah,
not
he's
only
great.
Does this resonate, but this is kind of incredible. So then I just started reading more of them, and then I just thought, like, wow, what would it be like to start writing some of my own story? I even complete a sentence? You know, I've been writing in lines and phrases for so long.
I write to the other end of the page. I always stop before
I
get
exactly.
there.
Right. And then I became just fascinated. Like, how do people do that? Like, how do they write a paragraph that's comprehensive, that's engaging, that leads from one thought to another logically?
Interesting.
That ends up telling the story. And so it kind of went on from there. And then I just thought, like, well, I got to do this. I got to try this just to see if I can do it.
Yeah, but you see, poetry is such a great discipline. It teaches you so much about writing. It teaches you about economy. It teaches you about the sound of language, which, you know, the thing is, you can ignore the sound of language and still be a perfectly fine writer, but language has noises it makes, and they, you know,
it does.
And I remember when I read The Rime of the Ancient Mariner and I was 15, I was like, holy shit. Coleridge, I was like, I didn't realize, you know, I get something now, you know, it just clicked through for me. So I just think if you can get into it, it prepares you for prose in a way prose can't prepare you for poetry, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I call it the ground of all great writing, the language of possibility. It's just such a rich and important place to start. And you think of all the great writers, whether they're writing great American novels or they're our favorite songwriters, they all read poetry.
Yeah.
And many of them practice writing it.
I just think there's something about it, whether you're going to be like a professional poet or not, there's just something about it that teaches you. I think it just teaches you about the how little you need to do something. Anyway, so you know, you said something earlier which I thought was really fascinating about how meditation led to your memoir. And I had a thought. This has only come to me very recently, and I wrote a little piece about it, but I'm going to write about more, which is that the power of learning how not to think. As a young man, I liked to not think. Sometimes that's why I could do sports and that's why I could play music. But I thought it maybe was a weakness because I was a little bit of a simpleton because, you know, smart people were thinking all the time. And it struck me that.
Right.
Because they're always thinking. But I've realized, and I'll bet you do this, and I want to get to writing as a path to awakening. One of the things that struck me I've had when I teach writing is I have to teach my students how to begin writing, that there's a thing you have to do before you can move from your domestic life to your writing, to writing that isn't automatic. And I realize what it is the ability to, like with meditation, to stop thinking about what you had been thinking about so you can get still so the ideas can come to you, that there's a stillness you have to enter and serve for things to come. And it hadn't even occurred to me that I'd been practicing that as a boy, but not seeing it as a strength. You know what I mean? I thought it was maybe, you know, because I should be thinking more about stuff. What do you think of that?
Right.
Because the meditation says, stop thinking. Stop thinking.
Exactly. No, and like you, I had this sort of terror that, you know, I was trained in art school, especially that, you know, you are judged by your brilliant idea. Like,
oh,
that's
God.
How you succeed. That's what makes you
the
awesome.
Concept.
And so the whole, especially, I mean, I got so heavy into the concept shit because my mentor was a conceptual artist.
Right.
And he was brilliant. He showed all over Europe, and I just, you know, I fell at his feet.
Sure.
And But he was, you know, he was also really smart and very humble, which took me a while to figure out.
Right.
And he was very experiential. You know, he used to take us up to the Sierra Nevada for the weekend. And he'd be like, yeah, we're doing our art seminar, our sculpture seminar, and we're going to go up to the Sierras and drink beer and play pétanque and go rock climbing.
Right.
And then, and in between, you know, people will set up and do some little installation pieces out in the, you know, in the yard or in the abandoned swimming pool or wherever.
Right.
But that was, I don't know, I'm sort of going off on a tangent here, but it made me think about how important the visual art was to, in terms of nourishing my my sense of the image and imagination.
Yeah.
And being
yeah.
able to translate that into language. But
so
I lost
talk
the tangent
to,
of your...
Well, sorry, talk to me about writing as a path to awakening. One of the things, I think one of the reasons that Laura connected you and I is that I look upon writing as I mean, I like to write and tell stories, but it's also a means to understand myself and understand what living is. Not just writing about myself, but I find writing to be how I learn about life in a way, the creative process. And so when did you start teaching it, and what led you to want to teach that specifically?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was on these sort of this dual, from external appearances, a dual path of writing. And then I got heavily into the meditation thing.
Right.
And, you know, I started going to these day-longs, and I started finding that it really nourished my creativity, and it really supported this practice of writing. And, you know, I never had any writer's block. I was never
right.
lost for ideas. And I attribute that to just remaining open and
yes.
willing
yeah.
to just receive and to pull from the eternal creative field that's basically always around us. It's always teeming
yep.
with stuff. I don't
yep.
even understand what that means, writer's block. But anyway, so there were these two paths. I mean, really one path, but ultimately, you know, we can talk about them in terms of two paths. And they're just sort of merging together. And I just, I don't know, at some point about 12 or 13 years ago, I was at Spirit Rock. I wanted to teach meditation, but I didn't want to do it without creativity
uh-huh.
and without engaged practice of writing. So I just had this notion that, like, what if we did something called writing as awakening or writing as a path to awakening? And I pitched the idea to Spirit Rock, and they said, sure, let's try it as a half-day mm-hmm. workshop. And it was very popular, and then we did it the next year with a full day long, and, you know, 100 people showed up or something. And,
wow. Wow.
And then, so I kept doing it for about 5 years. And then I thought, well, maybe I should, maybe I should pull the curriculum together into a book project. I already had this framework.
Right.
And so I just started, you know, just thinking about like how this, I was also fascinated by the whole notion that you know, meditation and mindfulness and waking up to sort of the truth of life, whatever that means, is kind of different than engaging with the imagination, you know, and in creating artwork, because you're thinking, you're engaging the mind, right, when you're creating
right.
an artwork or when you're writing.
Right.
And when you're meditating, you're letting go. You're just
yes.
letting it all go. No attachment, no clinging, just cleansing
right.
the mind. And like, how do we reconcile those two?
Well, but don't you, when you write, I always think the first thing you've got to do is cleanse the mind. Because I what I always feel like is I can't write until something has come to me. Like, I don't even know how to write until something has come to me. And things are always, just like
mm-hmm.
you said, I love what you said about, you know, that field is always there. But I have to put my mind in the correct vibration to allow those things to come in. Otherwise,
yeah,
you're
that's
imitating,
exactly it. That's
right?
The right vibration.
Yeah,
yeah,
you just got to
cool.
get there, and then it comes in. And what I found, what I always say, I wish I could live how I feel. I'm trying to live the way I write. That connected, that open, that non-judgmental. Because ideally, that's for me what I want. I don't want to judge. I don't want to know where it's going. I don't want to, I want to just work with what's given to me. And then I leave my desk and I start wanting to control things a little bit, maybe, you know, but less and less.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Because I feel so
totally
in when I'm writing.
Yeah.
And maybe when I'm not writing,
oh,
not
yeah.
quite
I mean,
so much.
When you're cooking, you're cooking. And, you know,
yeah.
it's just sort of the flow is there and the ideas are resonating and the energy channels are open.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a profound and connected place, but it is very different than, you know, when you're fully immersed in a meditative state.
Yes, yeah.
You know, people always say to me, and this is one of my little pet peeves, but they say to me things like, oh, well, you know, gardening is my meditation.
Right, right.
Or, you know, sweeping the deck is my meditation. Well, yeah. I mean, there's a meditative quality to that. Like there's a
yeah.
meditative quality to painting or
right.
even to certain aspects of writing.
Yeah.
But it's different. There's a qualitative difference when you sort of take it to a next level in which there really is a letting go, and it's a profound
yeah.
letting go. And it's an uncomfortable letting go
yeah.
because you start to lose elements of your ego. And
that's right.
You know, freaks us out. But
yeah.
it's also, that's the gateway to flow, to the flow state that you're
that's right.
describing.
That's right. And because I think the ego is always tied in part to identity and an idea, you know, thoughts,
yes.
ego is tied up
yep.
in thoughts, you know, I'm this thought,
mm-hmm.
this thought is real. And you have to let go of all thoughts, you know, and thoughts come to you when you're meditating, but it's the practice of saying, oh, that's right. I'm thinking, okay, goodbye. And you let it go and you let it go and you let it go.
Right.
And, right. Cause you know, it just keeps coming back. But to that feeling of well, it's that great line from Course in Miracles, which is in my defenselessness, my safety lies, that sense of letting go of all protection.
Mm.
And in that moment you feel at rest, at peace. And it's true. It's not quite the same as being in the flow of writing. Similar, but it's
mm-hmm.
not the same. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so if people want to get on the path to awakening, they can buy the book, of course. Buy the book, people. That's the easy way.
They don't
way,
even
but
have
what?
To buy it, actually, right now.
What?
They can, what? They can get it for – they're giving it away for free.
Holy
crap.
Why are you doing
for
that?
Is shipping and handling.
Wow.
If they can help me out with, like – I think it's like $7 for shipping and handling.
Wow.
And it's just –
where
a
do they get it?
Available free and it, at albertflindesilver.com.
Wow. Whoa, what a deal.
And
people.
Yeah.
Do you hear that? So, he's giving it away. So, this is worth far more than nothing. And so, so they can go to albertflindesilver.com and they can order their free copy of it. Free-ish.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, free-ish. I mean, it's all we're asking is $7.95 for shipping
wow.
and handling, and that just... so I don't lose too much money.
Well, that's,
you know, I have to buy the books and then I have to send them out
yes.
to people. And,
whoa,
it
okay.
also comes with a meditation program that's also free. So.
Wow. All right. Well, that you can't beat that. What if do you? I mean, once all this nonsense is lifted, will you be continue to teach workshops on this around?
That is my dream, and that's what I've been doing for the past several years.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. And if people said to you, I want you to come to Indiana and do it. Will you do it?
Indiana?
I'm just picking. I just picked Terre Haute. Yes. They want you in Terre Haute.
No,
would you
yeah.
do it?
Yeah, for if they could pay my fee.
All right. Good. Of course they'll pay your way. People
bless,
are dying
bless
to have
Indiana's
you.
Indiana's heart. But,
okay, good.
I'd rather go to Seattle.
Oh, well, then we – oh. We're lousy with people who would love this. We are filled with people. Who, so, yeah, we would definitely have you up here. Writing as a path to awakening. Okay, so they can find you at Albert Flynn De Silva, and they can even get the book for free. Or if they want, they can go on and they can buy it. They can buy it, too. You can do that, people. Either it's up to you. All right. Well, Albert, of course we had a great conversation because you're a great guy, and we got lots of things we could have talked about. But I got one more question for you.
Okay.
We've already been talking about this, but I want you to think about it even deeper. Finish this sentence. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Writing has taught me anything. It's taught me to be present.
Yeah.
To be alive in this moment, because this is it. And I'm curious about the entirety of it. And by this, I mean, you know, what I'm thinking about, but also what you, Bill, are thinking about, and what Mary, you are thinking about, and everybody else. And just to be present for the incredible surprise of life.
Oh, man. That's what it's so true. It's so true. When that flow, I always think that flow state, that's what life feels like when you're present. Like, that's what it can be when you actually bring your attention to the present moment. I agree. Good for you, Albert. Okay, listen, it's great having you on the show. Good luck with,
this
book
so much.
And the next and the next and the next.
Yeah, total pleasure and a delight. Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
You are very welcome. Take it easy.
Be well.
Yes, people, be present. Hey, that's where creation happens. The canvas of creation is the present moment. It's not the future. Can't create the future. Can't create the past. It's only one place it happens, here and now. And it's a good place to be because it's only reality. Yes, it's not so bad. I will be back again next week with another guest. Ooh, and maybe by next week I may have a special announcement. I can't make it yet. Ooh, but I might make it next week. So that'll be something to tune into, won't it? Yes, it will. Until then, thank you, RJ Jeffries. You're awesome. Thank you, Albert. And thank you, all of you. Be well and go find something you love to do and do it.